All right, this is Pure Decking number 87 for September the 13th, 1996. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps. Tonight we have a full panel with Analog, BSV, Suave, and we've also got Tim sitting in. So what's everybody drinking tonight, guys?
Sadly, nothing again.
Come on.
I'm drinking some Nicholas Lalu red wine.
Ooh, fancy. I've got more of the Jim Beam Devil's Cut. We're going to try not to get quite as smashed as I got last night on Shoot the Noise. That was pretty bad. So, yeah, I have no feedback to talk about, so I thought we'd just hop right into the what we're going to talk about on the show tonight. And it's kind of fun. I got a new cell phone. I got a Galaxy S3. So, since Suave is our Android expert here, at least as far as calling, I believe static analog. I'm linking your handles. I apologize. I said I wasn't going to get smashed, and I lied. Analog has also been playing around with an Android tablet, so I figured I'd give you guys a chance to talk instead of me for a change, so that you can essentially get me up to speed.
Oh boy.
So I guess the first question is, what apps do I actually need to have on this thing?
Well,
besides Minecraft, obviously.
Well, of course. the one app that I always like suggesting is definitely Tasker. There's another version that's free. It's called Llama, but Tasker is a little bit better. It's got more options. It's basically an app that lets you automate pretty much anything on your phone. It works pretty simple. You have triggers and you have actions. You can have multiple triggers and multiple actions. Like, for example, I've got mine set up where if my phone sees the Wi-Fi network at work, it puts my phone on silent. And then as soon as I stop seeing that, it takes it off silent mode. You can also set up stuff based on time, based on location, based on what apps you open. So, for example, if you open up your music app, you could actually, like, turn off your Wi-Fi. I don't know, like, whatever. It's extremely useful if you want to automate anything on your phone. Some people I noticed, I was reading about, they'd set it up, like, if they go to work, it actually automatically sends a text message, a random text message, like one of five or six different text messages to their wife saying, "Hey, honey, I love you. I'm at work, blah, 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 blah." So they don't even have to text their wife to keep her happy
awesome.
Anymore. It's just automated. So there's a lot of different things you can do with this app, and I highly recommend it.
All right. So that sounds like that sounds interesting because you actually set the phone to, like, you know, mute itself or silence at certain times of the day or wherever, which could actually be really handy.
Mm-hmm.
It's only $6.50 right now, so that's not bad.
Ouch, it went up.
Oh, it went up.
Right. Yeah, I think it was like $3 or $4 when I got it. I also recommend Llama, though, if you want to just try out an app like that. I think it's just LLAMA.
You know, for safety purposes, they ought to have it when you put a key in a car. It automatically turns the phone off so you wouldn't get arson messages.
Something I noticed for this particular model, I got the S3, is because it has that near-field communications. You could actually buy little near-field tiles.
Little sticker?
Yeah, you could buy a sticker, so you could certainly make a sticker that when you... wherever you normally set the phone in the car, that, like, if that sticker's present, it mutes the phone or turns it off or whatever. So you could pull off something similar to that. I don't know about it actually reacting to the turn of the car key. There's still the limitation of it has to be a sensor that the phone knows about, right? I mean, I'm assuming it's not a tricorder.
Yeah. It's based on the sensors the phone knows about. But, you know, you could also do stuff like magnetic field. So let's say... you have a metal plate or a magnet that you stick your phone on.
Wait a minute.
Because it is actually safe.
Have Tasker watch the magnetic fields and then react based on them?
You can.
Does this phone have a Geiger counter? Because I'm thinking of some great pranks.
It doesn't have a Geiger counter, but it does have a tricorder. And that's the other app I was going to recommend.
Oh, God.
The tricorder app, it's totally useless. It's just one of those things that you use to impress your friends sort of deal. And it basically just taps into all the different sensors. So, it's got your accelerometer and your magnetic sensors and your GPS and all these other sensors, like audio and stuff like that. And it just puts it all into one suite that looks like a tricorder. And it has the sound effects and everything like that. And it's kind of fun.
Oh, is that free? Please tell me that's free.
No, it's $1.50 almost.
Oh, that's not bad. Go say it's like a $5 app.
Yeah.
If you're out in the woods and you get lost, this is going to help you find a way home.
Well, not the tricorder app.
No, but the GPS in the phone probably.
Well, actually, no, that's not true. It does have a compass.
Oh, well, there you go.
So,
as long as you got batteries, so you're good.
Yeah. So if you're out in the woods.
That's the case with most electronics.
If you're out in the woods, turn the brightness all the way down, turn off all the radios, and pray a little.
So, personally, there's a couple apps that I like. I have both an Android phone and a Android tablet, but I like the Juice Defender. I don't know if you've used that one, Swab, but definitely for battery saving, because that seems to be the biggest complaint about most Android phones is that the battery just gets sucked down very, very quickly.
I just want to interject here. I don't have that problem, but I'm also very touchy with my device. Like, I always turn off background data or like network data, and I always turn off Wi-Fi when I'm not using it. And basically, those two things alone are enough to really extend your battery life.
That's true. The other side of that, though, for battery saving is something such as, Task Killer, like Advanced Task Killer is a free program.
Oh, yeah.
I know there's a lot of that's incorporated in the newer versions of Android. However, I still find myself having that installed. I'm still able to kill stuff constantly.
You can, but the way Android's actually developed, you can read about this. It really doesn't use any more of your battery life when there's stuff running. Now, if there are poorly programmed apps that don't actually go to sleep properly, then yes, they will kill your battery. So there are still some situations where Task Killer is useful, but if you find yourself going in and like killing all tasks all the time, you're probably wasting your time.
If that's the case, then there's a ton of programs that are not written properly.
I'll definitely agree with you there. Because really, anybody can publish an app.
Either way, I like the comfort of knowing that it's definitely off.
Absolutely. Especially if it's trying to use data or anything like that.
One of the funnest things I've done with my Android is actually being able to use it as a hotspot.
Absolutely.
There's a slew of programs out there for that. So,
actually, where I live, our carriers don't lock down our phones like that. So, you can do it by default.
Another one I know, Morbs, you had mentioned something about you're paying for features where you can like have numbers blocked with your carrier.
Yeah, that was with the iPhone. There, I had to actually pay an extra couple of bucks a month to AT&T because I had some spam phone calls, pretty much destroying my life.
When I first got my Android phone, I'm with a prepaid on the Android phone side of things. I have an AT&T contract phone through my work as well, but on the prepaid, it was somebody else's number, and yeah, I was getting spam. I mean, left and right. I mean, it was like I hang up from one call, I'm getting another one. I hang up from that call, I'm getting another one. And it was like 10, 11 o'clock at night. This happens. No, that's not gonna be cool with me. So I started researching it, and I found Mr. Number. It's free. And you'll find most apps that I use are free. And it does have a little bit of ad stuff to it if you're actually in the program. But once I added these people's numbers to Mr. Number, problem solved, not had a call since. So.
That's useful.
So cool. I'm sitting here trying to pull up app links to all these so I can throw them in the show notes as you guys throw them out. Not to mention, so I can grab them myself later. So I've probably
missed one.
You have the slew of other apps that that are on the iPhone and Android both that everybody already knows about. So you want to get all of those. But There's some pretty cool camera apps out there. I personally haven't used them, but I've seen a buddy that had one. And I can't remember the name. I'm racking my brain right now for it. But basically, it's kind of like an Instagram type thing, but with a heck of a lot more features.
Okay.
So it definitely gives you a way to, you know, do a lot of editing of photos on the fly as you're taking pictures, which is really cool.
I really dislike Instagram type apps. Like, it's...
What, you don't like taking cheesy hipster pictures?
Like, it's fine if you want to, like, get rid of red eye, or you want to resize an image, or, you know, do a little bit of color correction or something like that. But, like, to do the sepia tone, or add the film grain, or, like, add the bubble hearts, or any of that garbage, I just kind of want to strangle people who send pictures like that.
You were telling me about a way earlier, Suave, to make it read books to you.
Yes, I was actually just going to get to that. There's a couple of ebook reader apps that allow you to do text-to-speech. I've tried the Moon Plus e-reader, which is okay, but I found it crashes a little bit too much, and it's a little bit slow. But they have FB Reader. And you might remember this from the days of like the Nokia N8010, because that actually had the FB Reader on it. Like the go-to Linux e-reader. But it also has a plugin that allows it to do TTS, or text-to-speech. And on top of that, you can get a third-party voice. It's Ivona text-to-speech. And that's actually free right now. And I highly recommend the Amy UK voice. And I swear to God, it is amazing. It's almost like real life talking. Like, obviously, they don't have the emotion or anything like that. But here, I'm just going to play it for a second on my phone, and you'll kind of get an idea.
Oh, yeah, that does it for me.
So, I was just waiting for her to say something horribly dirty.
No. So, you can tell it's fake, but it's still really good. And I've probably listened to over 150 books, probably closer to like 1,000 books, actually, now that I think about it, using this. I go through a book every 2 days at work, just like listening to books, because I can't afford to buy audiobooks at that rate. And there's so many free books and stuff like that online. So really, like, I basically use my phone as this audiobook player, but I'm just using ebooks. And with like FB Reader, it actually has access to a bunch of online libraries, what are they called? Feedbooks, and I think what was
Gutenberg,
the other one?
Probably. What were you going to say there, Tim?
I was asking if there is a desktop version of that.
Yeah, I believe there is. I can't remember. As far as the voice itself, there isn't. It's unfortunately only available for mobile, because I was looking at actually setting up my computer with that voice, because it was just orders of magnitude better than anything else I've found.
He's
but unfortunately not at this point.
So, you know.
Well, seriously, if you like go and try some of the other voices that are out there, they just suck in comparison.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's definitely a good start on some of these apps here. What about actually like setting up the phone itself? You know, like ways of using the thing? Because remember, I'm coming from an iPhone here, mm-hmm. and I at first I got to say, just I've only had the thing about half a day. But playing around with it, one thing, the speed increase. Now, admittedly, I'm coming from an older iPhone. It's an iPhone 4, not a 4S, and obviously not a 5. I did wait to see what the 5 was before I made up my mind on getting the S3, but I just wasn't impressed. So I'm like, okay, let's try something new here. So, I mean, the speed of the thing is awesome. Like, I took a few pictures with it, and I'm used to, on the iPhone, it taking a picture and it taking a few seconds to process. No, it just took the picture, it was done. And that was awesome. The speed, of course, now that's a jump from 3G to 4G, so that's not entirely just because of the phone itself. But, you know, obviously the speed increase is nice. So I don't know, I mean, just like general usage of the phone, what do you guys think?
don't use... I know everybody... Okay, whenever you get a new fancy phone, first thing you do is you go and you set up the live wallpapers because they're really pretty. Don't do it. Kills your battery. Secondly, if you're using an S3 especially, I highly recommend using it in power-saving mode pretty much all the time.
What does that turn off, putting it in power-saving
mode? I believe it actually turns off one of the cores when it's not required.
Oh, gee. Okay. You underclock the phone. Gotcha. Yeah, that'll do it.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. And you don't even notice any problems because, like, when you're just using the OS or anything like that, it doesn't actually use both the cores anyways. So you really are saving your battery life. And literally just a flick and a touch to turn it back on if you're actually going to be running, like, a game or anything like that. Because really... That's the only possible situation when you need a dual core 1.5 gigahertz processor, like when you're running games or processing like video or something like that.
Sure.
You don't need dual cores to process a phone call?
Yeah, exactly.
But I want to get the highest quality phone call I can, obviously. No, I will, just speaking to the speed of the phone versus the iPhone, I've got the Pocket Minecraft app on both. And besides being a waste of money to have to buy the app again, I noticed playing on the S3 versus the iPhone 4, world of difference. I mean, it's smooth, it's playable, there's not a problem. On playing Minecraft on the iPhone 4, it was playable, but it felt kind of clunky.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a speed bump there, but I mean, I know the iPhone's had a couple of revisions since then, so that's not terribly surprising. So I can't really knock the speed of my old phone that much. I'm just kind of impressed with it. I love the whole just clicking a button in the web browser and the app showing up on my phone, too. That's just nice.
Yeah, that is handy. As far as actually just like setting up for basic usage, two other apps I wanted to mention. One that I personally use a lot, the Data Enabler. And it basically just allows you to put a little widget on your home screen that you just touch it and it turns off your data instead of having to go into settings. That's just a personal preference one, but also there's a huge number of custom keyboards that you can get for inputting text, and I personally, my favorite is SwiftKey. I've tried a couple of the other ones, like the one where you like don't actually lift your finger off the keyboard. I can't remember the name of that one, but I really like SwiftKey, and I've used it enough till it's actually at the point where I input like the first word of what I want to say, and then I can just keep tapping space, and it actually fills in all the words that I would actually say. You know, like it's just like, you know, I type in I, and hit space space space, and it'll say like I'll meet you there. And, you know, like it just really saves a lot of time when you're typing stuff out. It learns to predict what you're going to say based on what you normally type.
So when you start to type and it starts, you know, writing out limericks from porn movies.
yeah, pretty much.
So,
but
all right, cool.
Yeah, especially if you're switching over from an iPhone where you don't really have access to these custom keyboards and stuff like that. I highly recommend checking some of them out because they really kind of change the way you input text.
Well, you see, that's kind of why I bring the topic up. As on the iPhone, the phone itself is very set. You're essentially bringing in applications to play a game or hit a website or do a specific thing. Whereas on the Android, you can, from what I understand, swap out practically every piece of the operating system. Like you can get different dialers, different keyboards, different launch screens. So I just kind of thought I'd throw it out there and let some of the guys who've been using Android for a while essentially tell me what I need to get, because I'm new to the game here.
I remember the other keyboard now. It was the swipe keyboard. And that one's also pretty good because you actually don't have to lift your finger off the screen. You just kind of like scribble around from letter to letter and it figures out what words you're trying to type. So that's actually quite a bit faster.
A lot of fun at the beginning when you use swipe, though, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then, yeah, like what you were talking about there, Morps, like just customization. I've tried a couple of different launchers out there, and my favorite is definitely the ADW launcher. I'm not even sure how much it should cost, because I've already purchased it, and it tells me the price. It might even be free, I don't know. But it basically just allows you to completely customize everything on your screen. Like, you know, from how your home screen shows up to the different icons that are there, you can actually just swap out the icons and do themed icons if you want. Like, maybe you want a grayscale theme or like a super funky neon glowing green theme or like a Matrix theme or something like that. It really, really allows you to customize the way everything on your phone looks.
Cool.
I thoroughly enjoy that. Also, like, if you find like TouchWiz is like crashing on you, or you're just not liking it, it's lagging out or something like that, you can actually just completely stop using TouchWiz. You know, that's the Samsung launcher, and you know, go ahead and install any other launcher you want.
Cool.
Yeah, ADW launcher is free. They have another version. It's ADW launcher EX, which actually is the one that costs money.
Oh, okay.
And I agree, ADW launcher is awesome.
So, anything else you guys want to throw out there before we get into news stories here on using these phones? I mean, there's rooting the phone, which I don't want to spend too long on. But
go ahead. I'm not going to tell you how to root your phone, because especially the S3 I haven't even touched, because I'm worried about voiding my warranty. But I had a Galaxy Geo here a little while ago that I rooted, and there's a program out there. It's called Super One Touch, and you literally just plug in your phone and you push one button and it roots your phone for you. Like, that's all it takes. And from what I've been reading about the S3, that's about as easy it is for there. But there really isn't a lot to say about rooting your phone. It's just that. Although everybody I've read about says install a Titanium Backup first and back everything up.
So if you
or you try rooting it,
yeah, because you're gonna. It sounds to me like you're gonna fuck your shit up the first time you root a phone. So,
well, you know, possibly. Let's say there's a 5% chance of you screwing up your phone. If you don't back up your ROM and everything like that, and you screw up your phone, you're hooped. Your phone is now a brick. You do all your backups properly, you're probably gonna be able to restore everything.
Well, I mean, I jailbroke my phone and iPads fairly often, so. I guess it's probably not the same thing, though, is it?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same concept process. Of it.
Yeah.
Okay. The last thing I'll say is welcome to the correct side.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I'm not completely ditching all my iOS gear. I mean, I'm hanging on to the iPad because I got a lot of stuff for it, and I'm keeping the phone. I'm just going to use it as an iPod. And I should mention, I've discovered with my family, FaceTime still works. Like, even though I never went in and set up a FaceTime account or anything like that, I was talking with a family member, and I was actually talking to them on the Android phone, and they decided they wanted to FaceTime me. So it hung up on me on the Android phone, and the iPhone, which was on the Wi-Fi only, so I could still get some emails and stuff because I haven't transferred all my accounts over and stuff like that. My phone is still very vanilla at this point. I haven't got all my settings transferred and stuff like that. I've only had it for half a day, and I had to work most of that day. It hung up, and the FaceTime rang because I had the Wi-Fi on. So I thought that was really comical. It means that phone's UUID is associated with the mobile number somewhere for FaceTime. So anyways, yeah, let's go ahead and move on to some of the news stories here. But, yeah, it's just kind of funny, and keeping both devices around, one, I'm going to be a lot more cavalier about what I do with the iPhone at this point, since it's no longer my primary communication device. So I'm probably going to go nuts with some of the stuff you can do jailbreaking, like some of the really, really deep modifications you can do to the phone and stuff like that. It seems like every time I jailbroke the phone, the next day an update would come out and wipe out my jailbreak, so it's just kind of like, damn it.
So next week your iPhone's going to be bricked. Gotcha.
Yeah, pretty much, probably. So, but yeah. So timing might be off on that, but I don't actually care. So first story. First, yeah, Rocket's nailing right on here. First story. This one's from Ars Technica. A digital publishing company named Blue Toad has come forward to take responsibility for the leak of a million iOS unique device identifiers. No, this didn't have anything to do with my decision to switch to Android. That were previously attributed to an alleged FBI laptop hack. In a number of interviews published Monday, Blue Toad apologized to the public for the incident, explaining that hackers had broken into the company's systems in order to steal the file. The company says, however, that it had nowhere near the alleged 12 million UDIDs that the hacking group Antisec claimed to have in its possession. According to Blue Toad, the company was able to match its own data against the list released by Antisec last week, which, according to the interview with NBC, showed a 98% correlation. As soon as we found out we were involved and victimized, we approached the appropriate law enforcement officials, and we began to take steps to come forward, clear the record, and take responsibility for this, DeHart told NBC. We had no idea the impact this would ultimately cause. We were pretty apologetic to the people who relied on us to keep this information secure. Antisec claimed last week that it had successfully hacked into an FBI-owned laptop and obtained 12 million UDIDs. The group alleged that these were being collected by the FBI for unknown reasons. Antisec then released the first million of those UDIDs publicly, with the promise there'd be plenty more where those came from. Numerous users were able to find their UDIDs on the list, including some journalists and security researchers, but there was skepticism from the beginning that the FBI was actually involved. The FBI itself issued a statement that it had no evidence of such data collection or a hack. Apple soon followed with its own statement stating that the FBI had not requested UDIDs from Apple, and even if it had, Apple would not have turned them over. So I'm going to stop there with the story. But good on this Blue Toad company for at least owning up to it. Kind of sucks you got hacked. Maybe you ought to, you know, hire some consultants and get that problem taken care of. But at least they're owning up to it, and that's good on them.
Better than the denial. Everything's fine.
Oh, you mean the World of Warcraft approach?
Yes. Their systems are perfectly safe.
Yeah. Well, remember how surprised I was when they actually owned up to an attack? So,
you know, I don't jump on the conspiracy theory bandwagon often, but when I heard them say this, it's just screaming conspiracy theory. You know, like, oh yeah, yeah. Oh no, it wasn't the FBI. It was these guys. We did it. Yeah, yeah, sure. We just got this $100,000 out of nowhere. We did it. It was us.
What were you gonna say there, Tim?
I just want to know how much FBI paid them to own up to it.
Well, according to Suave, $100,000 or so. Sounds to me like they're kind of cheap as far as taking the blame goes.
But you know, to be fair. If like Anonymous hasn't come out with any other numbers,
that's true. They haven't.
And I feel like if somebody had come out and said, "Oh yeah, well we had a million numbers that we were hacked from us, and a million numbers were released," they could easily dispute that and release like I don't know, let's say another 2 million out of their 12 million, just to prove that they're lying. But they haven't.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much verifying it in my mind.
Well, the story's fairly recent, too, so we'll give them a few days to respond. If anything comes out, we'll try to follow up next week. So, let's see here. This next one's from Yahoo News, and this is just nice and creepy. It's from London. At the King Egbert School in Sheffield, teens who go to the loo are never really alone. Video cameras are inside all 12 bathrooms. Citing findings gathered via Freedom of Information request, privacy activist Wednesday identified King Egbert as one of the more than 200 high schools across Britain that have installed surveillance cameras in bathrooms or locker rooms. Wow.
Why?
The group behind the report, Big Brother Watch, said a powerful watchdog is needed to ensure that the students' privacy is protected. The report will come as a shock to many parents, said Director Nick Pickles. Nick, there's that name. Schools will need to come clean about why they're using these cameras and what is happening to the footage. Leslie Bowles, King Egbert's principal, argued that the cameras help keep their students safe and give your pedophile teachers masturbation material. Anyways, it's a way of safeguarding our children, Bowles said. She described her school's cameras, whose footage is reviewed only if there's suspicion of wrongdoing. Sure. Useful as anti-bullying tools. She rejected any suggestion that the recording captures the students' most intimate activities. Well, it's a bathroom and locker room, so...
Well, they delete that incriminating stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Right after they make a couple of posts to the Tor networks, saying these cameras monitor just the doors. Yeah, fucking right. The cameras are nowhere near the toilet cubicles, she said.
All doors?
Yeah, so now you're...
The locker doors, the shower doors, the stall doors.
What'd she say right here? The cameras are nowhere near the toilet cubicle, she said. Great, so now all of your students know when they want to beat the shit out of the little nerdy guy to take him back over by the stalls. a number of 207 high schools across England, Wales, and Scotland acknowledged installing cameras in bathrooms and changing rooms, according to Big Brother Watch, which sent freedom of information requests to nearly 4,100 schools in May. That's a conservative figure, according to Pickles. Nearly half the schools queried didn't reply by the deadline. It isn't clear where in the bathrooms those cameras are being placed, who is watching, or whether any youngsters have been taped in the state of undress. Well, if they're in a locker room, they probably have. So, scrolling through here, yeah, nothing else new in the story except people bitching. So, yeah, in Britain, they've gotten the police state to the point where they're putting the cameras in the bathrooms.
So there's a line in your text here says that the images are not looked at unless there has been a reported problem, and all images are deleted after a maximum of 30 days.
You believe that?
Oh, so the pedophile
no, of course not.
Keep them for 30 days and publish them on the internet.
Just like the TSA only keeps your images for 30 days.
Well, think about this for a second here. You know, how easy is it when you're looking at the screen to whip out your camera phone, since we were just talking about phones, and snap a picture and keep a personal copy for whatever the hell you would use a personal copy of that for?
Yeah,
what's to stop them from publishing it on the internet?
Very little. They're in the EU, and the EU has some pretty strict laws about that. So if they get caught, you could see some people going to jail, unlike what happened here when they got caught snapping pictures with students' laptops where they got a slap on the wrist and claimed not to do it again. What were you going to say there, Analog?
Let's find the IP addresses, you know, locker rooms.
Oh, for God's sake. Yeah, you're right. What if they're the kind of cameras where they're just posted online without a password?
I wonder if they really are.
They very well could be. It probably wouldn't be that hard to get the school's IP addresses and just do a quick nmap scan. Pull everything on port 80, pull open tabs, see what they are. If you're going to do that, by the way, speaking from personal experience, if you're going to write a little script to grab everything on port 80 from an nmap scan and throw it in a Firefox tab, you're actually going to want to throw those IPs in a text file and do them 10 to 15 tabs at a time. I've discovered on Backtrack some Java applications, especially Lexmark printers, can hang your browser process. So just be aware. Let's see. Next one up. This one's from VirusTotal. I'm not actually going to read their copy here. VirusTotal got bought by Google. For anybody who doesn't know, VirusTotal was a website where you could take a file you weren't sure if it was infected with a virus or not and upload it to the site, and their script would run 30-some-odd antivirus scans against it to see if it was clean or not. And this is really handy when you were working with a file from an intrusion, you weren't sure what was going on with it, you wanted to see if something could identify it outside of a tool you already had, or if you were going to do it a pen test and you wanted to make sure that you had properly encrypted your file so nothing would ID it. That said, I can also say from personal experience, if you're uploading things to VirusTotal to see if they're going to be detected by an antivirus or not, that's actually not that great of an idea, because they occasionally throw them in a VM and run them, as I know, as I got root on a VirusTotal virtual machine for a while, which was hilarious. If anybody remembers that episode of Pure Decking, I was pretty embarrassed that I did that too, because it was kind of an accident. So what, you accidentally hacked VirusTotal? But Google bought them. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I mean, Google's lots of funding. Their security initiatives are generally pretty good. That said, you send a lot of weird files up to VirusTotal. So, anyways, Analog went a little bit nuts there and found us some information on that high school. Well, we got a hobby for later. So,
oh look, they have some live webcams.
Oh God. Oh shit!
It's like somebody didn't properly secure their network cameras. God.
Well, what's the range here? They've got a Class C. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Anyways. No, we won't.
Oh, good point. So nobody cares about VirusTotal being bought by Google.
Well, you know. I'm curious. I'll be more interested when I find out what Google's going to do with it. Like, if it's just going to be something that they're going to implement into Gmail so it scans all the files that come out, I'm not going to be very interested. But if Google actually comes out with some form of antivirus service, like, I don't know, Google virus. I don't know.
Well, VirusTotal wasn't its own virus service. They implemented like 30 some odd others.
Right. But like if Google actually implements that as a service or something along those lines,
sure,
it might be interesting. But, you know, just the fact that they purchased it, not so much.
Okay.
These buy other companies all the time.
Okay. Well, let's go on to the next one here. This one's from Ars Technica. A federal judge in Illinois has ruled that intercepting traffic on unencrypted Wi-Fi networks is not wiretapping. The decision runs counter to a 2011 decision that suggested Google may have violated the law when its Street View cars intercepted fragments of traffic from open Wi-Fi networks around the country. The ruling is a preliminary step in a larger patent trolling case. The company called Innovo IP Ventures has accused various hotels, coffee shops, restaurants, and supermarkets and other businesses that offer Wi-Fi services to the public of infringing on 17 of its patents. Okay, first of all, it's a patent troll, so I hope somebody, I don't know, hangs weights to their feet and see how well they can swim. Innovo wanted to use packet sniffing gear to gather Wi-Fi traffic to use as evidence in the case. What? Oh, okay. It planned to immediately delete the contents of the packets, only keeping the headers. Still, the firm was concerned that doing so might violate federal privacy law, so it sought a preliminary ruling on the question. Federal law makes it illegal to intercept electronic communications, but includes an important exception. It's not illegal to intercept communications made through an electronic communication system that is configured so that such electronic communication is readily accessible to the general public. Judge Hames Holderman ruled that this exception applies to Innovo's proposed packet sniffing. In the Google Street View case, a California judge suggested that Wi-Fi communications were not public, even if they were sent without encryption. Judge Holderman reached the opposite conclusion, and his quote was, Innovo is intercepting Wi-Fi communications with a riverbed Air PCAP NX packet capture adapter, which is available to the public for a purchase of $698. Yeah, that's on the cheap side, actually, for a high-end Wi-Fi car. More basic packet capture adapter is available for only $198, one that's going to miss most everything because one that cheap probably doesn't do channel hopping. The software necessary to analyze the data that the packet captures collects is available for download for free. Yeah, that would be Wireshark, probably. With a packet capture adapter and the software, along with basic laptop computer, any member of the general public within range of unencrypted Wi-Fi network can begin to... Okay, so this guy's reasoning is because anybody can go out and buy the tools, it's okay. So I can go out and buy alligator clips, a tape recorder, and an old phone to rip apart, and that will let me wiretap on traditional phone lines. Does that make it okay?
Well, yeah.
Because that's obviously...
Of course it does.
That's this guy's reasoning. Because anybody can go out and buy Wi-Fi sniffing, and it's not encrypted. It's therefore okay to do it.
Hey, anybody can go out and buy camera equipment. Doesn't mean it's okay to put it in locker rooms.
Very nice. Actually, where's a... I don't have Toasty loaded on this toast soundboard. How did that
No,
happen?
Toasty.
Yeah, I got Oh Fuck in there
twice.
There
we go.
Hang on, let's fix this. Somehow I got Oh Fuck in there twice.
Toasty!
There you go.
There we go.
So, anyways, just to finish out the story here, legal scholar OnCare disagreed with Judge Holderman's reasoning. No one suggested that unsecured wireless networks are set up with the goal that everyone on the network should be free to read the private communications of others, he wrote. In my view, that ends the matter. The exception doesn't apply, and the interception of the contents of wireless communications is covered by the Wiretap Act. Now, I generally tend to agree that unless you were the owner-operator of the network, you really shouldn't be intercepting Wi-Fi or any other network communications. But that said, if it's not encrypted, there's nothing really preventing somebody from doing it except, you know, their conscience. So if you care about what you're doing, encrypt your shit.
Well, and you know, like, not even encrypted. Like, well, yeah, okay, I guess it's called encryption. But, like, you know, it's simple, like, WPA, WPA, you know, it doesn't really matter. As long as there's something on there, it should be protected. But, yeah, really, like, open Wi-Fi... It's kind of like, you know, hanging out naked in front of an open window.
Well, some people do that.
Well, yeah, I know. And it should be perfectly for people to be watching them.
If they're hot chicks,
through their open window. You know, that's...
If it's a ugly fat guy, no, you're not allowed to hang out in front of your open window. Sorry. yeah.
What if it's a black guy that turned white and holding a baby upside down?
Oh, fuck.
Oh,
yeah.
Too soon.
Hang on, here we go. Tim just got blamed. No, that wasn't too soon, Suave. That was just...
I know. It was, what, like 2 years ago?
More than that. How, he's been dead for 2 years. What are you talking about? Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about. I just... Well, this purple guy.
Wow. Okay, moving on. H Online. This one's from H Online. GoDaddy has said that outage was not caused by a hacker attack. The service disruption that took place that took thousands of websites hosted on GoDaddy offline was not due to a denial of service attack or to a hack as originally thought. In a statement, GoDaddy confirmed that internal technique difficulties were to blame for the outage and apologized for the incident. So yeah, the janitor unplugged a router or something. GoDaddy CEO Scott Wagner said that the company had determined the service outage was due to a series of internal network events. Everything is due to a series of events that corrupted router data tables. It took 6 hours for the company to completely restore the service across its network. GoDaddy, which claims to be the world's largest domain registrar, said that administers more than 53 million domain names for its client. Initially, speculation that the outage was caused by a hacker attack had been fueled by a Twitter user claiming to have attacked GoDaddy in the name of the hacker collective Anonymous. This was later denied by several other sources believed to be associated with the group.
Oh, and it's actually really funny. If you actually read the Twitter post, it's something along the lines of, it's like, oh yeah, I took them down and I can't really talk about it right now because I have a bunch of other stuff going on. But it was actually written in like the form of like a 13-year-old who's never gone to school and doesn't know how to spell or anything like that. It was really poor. It was just sad.
Well, you know, I do wish some of these news stories would get it that Anonymous is not like a group. It's like you don't get the Anonymous membership card. Admittedly, some people have printed those up, but there's no official, you know, like, you know, I pay my dues, I'm a member of Anonymous. No, it doesn't work that way. Anonymous is a label people put on themselves. So,
and like the name, it's because they want to be anonymous.
It's sort of like calling yourself a Republican or a Democrat. It's about the same level of scrutiny before somebody's allowed in. So, yeah, just bear that in mind, guys. But, yeah, no, GoDaddy says they fucked up. It wasn't a hacker. So,
but, you know, but like, what does it matter whether it was a hacker or whether it was a hardware failure? They still had a massive outage that took their websites down for a pretty decent chunk of time. And either way, this is something that makes me not want to have them as a service provider.
I will admit.
Regardless of what it was.
Galaxy 15 Radio, well, not Galaxy 15, one of my previous domains that eventually became Galaxy 15 Radio, was initially registered through GoDaddy. Now, I switched off of GoDaddy a long time ago because of other issues that cropped up with them, mainly problems with their service. Their website just sucked. I mean, I really wanted to be able to go in and change a DNS entry without getting slammed with 14 ads for various other services. So,
you don't like ads?
They annoyed the shit out of me. So that's why I quit using GoDaddy. And that was a long time ago. And so far, history's borne that out to be a very wise decision. So,
but they do have some hot models. Come on.
And I totally so respect their marketing decisions. So, what'd you say, BSV? I think I stepped on you there.
Bad joke.
Bad joke. Got it. There you go. All right, next one up. This one's just fun. And I'm hoping Static has something to say on this one as well. It's from geek.com, but it's been in a couple of places. The primary source is actually from forum posts. So if you follow through the story, you can find the links to the forum posts where people are digging on this. Users on a World of Warcraft forum recently discovered a series of repeating graphical artifacts hidden deep within the screenshots taken when playing World of Warcraft. Now, this is not hitting... This is not the, like, you know, the Windows screenshots. This is using the in-game screenshot function. After some good old-fashioned community-wide poking and prodding, it was discovered that this graphic worked just like a QR code and even had 88 bits of data embedded within it. After extracting the binary code from the graphic and translating it to text, it was discovered that the information contained a user's account ID and Realm IP address. This information is mostly harmless, considering Blizzard stopped using account IDs publicly after the new Battle.net service launched. Still, the idea that Blizzard was slipping this information in without the user being aware is pretty interesting. Blizzard clearly states in its terms of service that this kind of activity is going to happen, but doesn't spell out the scenario specifically. When asked for comment, Blizzard employees noted that it was used specifically for tracking down leaks when players are invited to participate in beta tests. And it's, what's more likely is that the information is also used to help track down users who are involved in behavior that violates the terms of service of the game. That would be people posting screenshots of their private servers. There is some concern from players that this information, however limited, would be enough for a user to be specifically targeted for in-game spam or more malicious activity. Some has gone so far as to release an application that helps quickly translate the QR code into binary. While Blizzard hasn't responded to the security concerns specifically, I'm sure their response will end up with, "Hey, have you checked out our authenticator?" Which is probably true. So essentially, Blizzard is tagging, anytime you take a screenshot in-game with World of Warcraft, it's tagging it with the user ID and the realm's IP address. And I'm willing to bet, besides looking for beta leaks, this is also probably how they track down private servers, you know, people taking screenshots and showing them off.
Yeah.
But is that only used in beta, or is that used?
No, it's on all the time. It's been on since like 2007. According to the forum post.
Yeah.
Well, then that's against the terms and policies, and they shouldn't be allowed to.
It is against their terms of service.
It's in the terms of service.
This is why you need to.
They're allowed to collect data, but it doesn't say anything about publishing it.
Well, they're not publishing it. You are.
Yeah, but you're never informed about this. So it's kind of this gray area that's actually not covered by the TOS.
That's true.
You know,
and
it's kind of like how Sony did, where they, you know, they leaked all that information and or were gathering all that information and not telling people about it. It's similar in that regards. However, you know, I don't have much to say other than the fact, you know, like I've said before, don't do anything online you don't want other people to know about.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, and if you're going to publish screenshots of, you know, World of Warcraft, maybe you ought to pull them into Photoshop and, you know, apply a very, very light blur or effects.
Here's an idea. Push print screen instead of taking an in-game screenshot.
That would certainly work.
What I do.
Stop using your brain.
So, or, you know, there's all kinds of things you can do. Anything that'll mess up a QR code, slightly blurring it. You know, this is just like any other data hidden in an image. You do any modification to the image, the data's gone.
Also, from what I was reading about it, there's a lot of repetition to the data. So you actually have to, like really mess it up for them to not be able to recover it. Yeah.
What about, like, a hardcore
resize? They've got it in such a way where, like, you can crop out a small section of the image and publish that, and they still get the data.
Well, I'm thinking more in terms of, like, you take the whole screenshot and, screenshot and shrink it by, like, 50%.
Yeah, that'll probably do it.
Yeah. So, yeah, just, you know.
Just crank up the JPEG compression.
So they get all those squares. Damn. Let's see. Last story here. This one's from H Online. The European Union has made its Computer Emergency Response Team a permanent institution. They're trying to make Section 9. The announcement was made on Twitter by EU Commissioner Neelie Kyllönen and came before even the existing pilot project staff were informed. So they posted on Twitter, then they told the staff. Outstanding. The emergency response team... Oh, fuck, I lost my place. The emergency response team handles the network security of all EU institutions, including the European Court of Justice and the European Central Bank. The CERT has repeatedly been called into action, for example, when hackers launched attacks on EU websites during a dispute around the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, and after break-ins by data-hungry Chinese hackers. According to Anthony Gravilli, the spokesman for the responsible EU commissioner, Maros Sofelik, if anybody else wants to take another attempt at that name, I apologize for being American.
That's a lot of phony symbols.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, if anybody else wants to take a crack at that name, go right ahead. The greatest threat to the EU networks comes from hackers who steal information on a commercial basis. Their methods and tools are a challenge to all major organizations worldwide, said Gravilli, adding that the international cooperation between the CERTs is therefore crucial and that CERT EU will play a major contributing role. However, the CERT EU is currently offering a rather limited service. Operating times between 9 and 1700, Mondays to Fridays, according to on official. So if you're going to hack something in the EU, do it in the evening or on the weekends. Apparently, cool. Incoming emails are only monitored by a duty officer during these times. Furthermore, two of the previous 10 staff are leaving the team, including the European Network and Information Security Agency expert. When asked about the staff members who are leaving, Gravilli promised that there will be replacements in terms of opening times. The spokesman didn't want to commit, saying that CERT EU will expand its resources based on requirements.
So there's 8 people total.
Yeah, 8 people for Europe.
As do they know the size of data?
No, they have absolutely no clue. As somebody who's had to do forensics, you don't know how big an 80 gig hard drive is till you have to go through it byte by byte trying to figure out what the fuck happened. Yeah. It's not fun. So, yeah, I'm sure there's a reason they only answer emails from, 9 to 5. It's because if they didn't,
the union says so.
Yeah, well, never minding that, they probably wouldn't get anything else done. So, anyways. But, yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, anyways, I think if there's no more comments on that, it's time for this.
Me love you long time.
All right. For Digital Dojo tonight, I've got 3 things I kind of just want to point out exist. I'm not really going to get in-depth in anything. First one up, this one's from Hacker News, but it's kind of all over the place. There is an Android application called Wi-Fi Kill, which is essentially a port of the Windows tool Netcut, which is a tool for doing ARP spoofing attacks. Essentially, the application will let you knock another user off of this. If you're on a Wi-Fi network, it will let you join the same network and knock them off. Essentially, you spend bad ARP packets and make the system think they've disconnected. You can also redirect their HTTP traffic to a different IP address. You can do phishing with it. It's an ARP spoofing tool, so any of your other ARP spoofing attacks, this thing can probably do. The fun part is it's on an Android cell phone, so when you have somebody looking around to see who the hell's messing with their network, you stick your cell phone in the pocket, right? So, I don't know. Nobody cares about.
No, I like it. Okay. This is great. Wi-Fi Kill is an awesome app, especially like when you're in hotels and stuff like that. There's always some douche just hogging all the bandwidth and torrenting or doing something, streaming videos or something stupid like that. Because always these hotels have like shitty connections. And so, like having an app that just allows you to like kick everyone off is just amazing.
Well, not only that, when they go to reconnect, you can then capture the handshake and use that to get their encryption passwords. So,
well, yeah. I generally prefer to use them for somewhat benign purposes. But, you can do that too. There's also all kinds of other great apps for Android, like Face Sniff, which is basically Fire Sheep for Android. All kinds of other good stuff like that.
Nice. Well, you see, I've been told I've been too white hat, so I'm getting kind of more cynical. I'm deciding maybe I should just, anyways, just go flat out malicious and be done with it. Just wear the mask.
Is that the same model that them perverts are staying in that's looking at the bathrooms?
I don't know. I'm sure there's some of that going on. So the next tool I just want to point out exists. This is from Pentester Lab. And it's a virtual machine. Well, it's an ISO file. It's a live Linux ISO file that it's intended to be booted in a virtual machine that trains you how SQL injection works and what you can do with it. Specifically, you get a virtual machine set up and you get the PDF that walks you through it. And it teaches you how to do a basic SQL injection attack against a poorly coded, website. And essentially run commands on the box after you've taken control of it with SQL injection. Now, I've not actually sat down and worked this exercise. I intend to just because it looks interesting. I want to see how accurate it is. But I skimmed it, and it looks good. It looks like it's a nice little write-up. I like the virtual machine just ready to go. It's got a little ISO file, so you boot it up and you go. And if anybody's not really messed with SQL injection, that is the primary way websites are attacked and defaced and servers are popped is SQL injection. So even if this thing doesn't get terribly complex and, you know, all the little places you can look for it, it's a good exercise to know. It gets you kind of thinking on how this stuff works. So I'm certainly going to sit down and run through the exercise just to kind of see what all's there. I don't know. What do you guys think? You know, just a quick little exercise to kind of show you how this stuff works, basics of how to do it. Go ahead.
You know, I feel like that is somewhat useful, and that's probably something that just about every web host or, you know, web developer should actually go through.
Yeah, no, if you run a website, you should do this because it gives you an idea of what to look out for.
Yeah, exactly. And really, like, that's the only way to really make sure that you are secure is to know how it's done, you know, how to protect yourself against it.
Well, it also gives you a good idea of what to watch for in log files, you know? I mean, if you're administering a server and you kind of know what a SQL injection looks like, it gives you an idea of what to watch for in case you may not know what's going on right away, but you can look in the log files and go, huh, there's a select union statement in an HTTP header. Okay, I think I know what's going on here. And it gives you a place to start. So in my job, I've talked to web admins who didn't have a clue about code injection, let alone SQL injection. You know, they'd never heard the concept before. And it's like, well, why would you ever put SQL commands in a password box? And it's like, well, so I can make your web server do shit you don't want it to do. And that just, you know, you see it go over them, that wave of enlightenment of, oh. So, yeah, I mean, it's a nice little wrapped up package. I mean, it's a course. So I'm just going to throw it out there and say, pull this down, run it. It's good to know. And finally, the last little thing I want to throw out in Digital Dojo tonight is media.defcon.org. The reason I want to point this out is they have a torrent on there that has all of the conference CDs and DVDs and the presentation files in one big-ass torrent. So if you want a way to make yourself really paranoid, just pull this stuff down and watch it all in a weekend. But in all seriousness, there's some awesome stuff in there. It's all DEF CONs, you know, 1 through 20. And, definitely worth watching. Definitely worth pulling some of that stuff down. I know a lot of the videos are up on YouTube and Vimeo and other places like that. But this actually has the presentation PDFs. This has, if it has their CDs and DVDs, it should actually have example files from where they were providing code proof of concept. So, I mean, I personally have a hell of a time ever getting out to Vegas to go to these conferences, so I'm really happy they put all their content online. So, of course, the torrent's going to be fucking huge, but hey, that's what BitTorrent's for. Anybody?
I think I'm going to look into it because I'd like to know more about that.
They have eMule links.
Yeah, they do.
I didn't know eMule was still a thing.
I didn't either, but they've got them.
It's eMule. That's all.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to close out the show here then, unless anybody else has anything they want to throw out. Obviously, listen to the stream. We're constantly working on it. I'm going to be working on the scripting this weekend. Sard is supposed to be managing our music. I know he's always looking for new music to add. If you are an independent music artist and you want your music on the station, get in the feedback form. Let us know. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays. NR7, whenever we can convince BSV that he's tired of us hiding snakes in his house. And, of course, always check the Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handles. Use the feedback form in the shout box. If you have stuff, tools, projects that you want me to look at, send me links. I had a guy in the shout box a couple of days ago who we had mentioned a tool in one of our conversations, just kind of mentioned it existed. And he was really upset that I didn't go into more details. So if you got something you want me to look at, shoot me links so I can use it for show content. Because, you know, I mean, I'm not afraid to admit I skim shit before I talk about it. So unless it's Digital Dojo and I'm really sitting down talking about how something works, in that case I'll pull it down and play with it. But I'm pretty sure, because it was one of the mesh networking tools. I'd read about it on, I skimmed its Wikipedia page, and I mentioned it existed. That was about it. So if it's really something you want me to dig into, let me know. You know what I mean? Otherwise, I'm just going to find, you know, rat hole into something I find interesting and keep going. But that's pretty much all I've got for tonight. Has anybody else got anything else before I hit the play button here on the music? Go ahead, Tim.
Did you guys have a chance to talk about the attack on Libya? The embassy?
That,
last night?
I think they talked about that on Shoot the Noise yesterday, didn't they?
Okay, well, I sadly missed that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we talked about that on Shoot the Noise, so.
Okay.
Yep, that's pretty much all I've got. So, here we go.
I like the program.